listening to God's word, daily prayers, frequent and faithful reception of the Eucharist, confession of sins and absolution, good works. Learn more about the life of Lutheran piety in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. It's written by regular guest Pastor Will Whedon. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. Thank, praise, serve, and obey. Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to start a series, a multi-part series, on two very different approaches to educating our children, educating ourselves. One is going to be very familiar because it's the one that pervades most of education today, even Christian education in many cases. And believe it or not, it's best labeled progressive education. The other one will seem a little odd, a little antiquated, but really is the way forward, in my opinion, and that's classical Lutheran education. And by way of comparing and contrasting those two in this series, we're going to start out talking about education that is method-driven and education that is content-driven. Dr. Thomas Korchak joins us on this Monday afternoon. He's assistant professor of theology at Concordia University, Chicago, author of the book Lutheran Education from Wittenberg to the Future. And he's going to be speaking at an open house at noon on Sunday, January the 28th at St. Paul Lutheran Church in Hamel, Illinois. His presentation is titled Forward to the Past, How a Classical Education Truly Prepares a Child for the Future. Dr. Korchak, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Well, it's good to be back, Todd.
If my child can simply go on the internet, and you can find almost anything you want on the internet, either how or what, by looking stuff up with a search engine like Google, is his education really that important?
Well, that's sometimes the idea that we're given. And often I'll hear people say, well, if you can look it up on Google, why should I learn all these facts? Why should I learn all that information? And part of the problem with that question is that we're trying to measure education by the wrong standards. We try and measure education by standards that are put forth by a progressive model of education that sometimes maybe not what parents are really after when they try and think of education. And this gets into the difference between a progressive education and classical education, or a methods-driven education and a content-driven education.
So what are the ways that parents shouldn't, the particular ways that parents shouldn't measure the value of their child's education?
Right. And one of those ways that we shouldn't be measuring is on whether they're how easy they can access information on the internet. Lately, we've seen a big push to get iPads and increase technology in the classroom. And one of the ironies is that this is happening at a time when there's more and more research saying that children are getting too much exposure to screen time, and that this is having a negative effect on their ability to learn. The idea that we have to have more technology and more screen time for kids because that's the way kids learn now is constantly pushed on us. There's a different way to go about that. If I'm going to look up something on Google, which is useful, I do it all the time, you probably do it all the time too, we have to know what we're looking for in the first place.
So let's talk about what changed about 7,500 years ago in Western education that kind of brought to an end what you say is almost 2,000 years of a way of educating ourselves and especially our children that had proven itself useful, had excelled in proving itself useful, and not only useful, but also beneficial. What happened about 75 years ago?
Yeah, the history of Western education, and understand that Western education and Christian education for 1,800 years is synonymous. The church had been the leader in education, and we have produced some of the finest educational minds in history. so as when the church was kind of in charge of education, the church recognized that what was necessary for a child to be a leader in society and also a leader in the church is they needed a storehouse of facts and information which would enable them then to apply themselves to a new situation. Sometimes I like to give an analogy. If I was to draw a squiggle on a page, and you would say, what's that squiggle? I would say, well, that's the letter S. And you would say, well, good, it's just one little bit of information like that. But if I take that squiggle as well as 25 other squiggles, and I give them letter or names, and we have the alphabet, all of a sudden I can take those different symbols and I can assemble them in all sorts of different ways to develop new words. Well, the history of education is really the thought that if you take a bunch of all the essential information that a child should know, a lot of facts, a lot of information, and give that to the child, and also place that information in context, then as they go through life, they're going to be able to draw on that information and apply it in new and unique ways. If I could give an example, just this past week in our building, there was an economics class going on across the hallway, and they were talking about Brexit and what it's going to mean for Britain to exit Brexit. And I listened just out in the hallway for a few minutes, and all the economic arguments. Well, I walked into my class early, and a bunch of students were there, and I said, you know, it's useful to know the economic arguments, but really can't understand Brexit unless you can understand British history. You have to understand British history going back to the year 1066. Now, for your listeners, 1066 is the year of the Norman invasion. It's a pivotal moment, and it used to be that every eighth grader learned the year 1066 because it was such a pivotal year. Well, I mentioned this to all the students, and they all stared back at me, and not a one of them knew what 1066 referred to. And I started asking all my classes that, and actually, out of all my students, three of them knew what 1066 was about, and two of those had attended a classical school. One actually attended a classical school, one was classically homeschooled. So it spoke well to them. And they were able to take the whole concept of British history and then apply it to Brexit. Just they had never heard anything much about Brexit, but they understood British history. They had all the facts and they could apply them in a new way. And that's kind of how the church has always approached this job of teaching. Now, what's happened in recent history is that what's become more important instead of information is that you have methods. And so methods have become the driving force, the dominating force in American education. Yes, information is still present, but the methods count because you don't know what a child is going to need to learn. And so you just give them different methods of learning and hope that eventually they're going to find the right information. But getting back to the whole Google question, if I don't know what to look up at Google, I'm not going to be able to find the right information.
So you've highlighted there the difference between a content-driven education, which is the prevailing model throughout Western history, and a method-driven education model. What was the place of methods when content was driving education?
Well, methods have always played a role. And in fact, one of the interesting parts of studying educational history is that the great educators of the past have always been interested in finding innovative ways for teaching. I loved reading Erasmus. Erasmus was the great 16th century Dutch humanist. And in Erasmus's educational writings, he will talk about all sorts of innovative ways to teach children, especially young children. He talks about baking letters, biscuits in the forms of letters, and then children can arrange the letters and then eat the words that they form. He talks about archery practice, where boys can put letters up on targets, and then the boys would try to spell letters by shooting arrows at letters. Now, that's pretty innovative. I don't know if schools today exactly want to go down that route, but it shows that teachers have always looked for innovative ways and interesting ways to present information. But at the end of the day, it all led to the student being able to grasp good content so that they had something of value that they could carry with them through the rest of their lives. They were concerned about teaching timeless information that would be useful in a variety of different circumstances.
So content-driven education was obviously not unconcerned about how children learned or the method of learning. It seems like they're rather sophisticated, in fact.
Yeah, at times.
But they viewed the value of education largely in having a well-rounded basic knowledge of the subjects. Is that a good way of putting it?
Oh, absolutely. If you just think about it, if I don't have the content, what good are the methods? I have nothing to teach. I've done surveys of beginning teachers where a vast majority of them, and I'm talking up to 75-80%, cannot identify the First Amendment. They can't identify the three branches of federal government. They can't identify who America was at war with in World War II. One of the questions I would ask on my little survey form was, who is the first man to set foot on the moon? And most got it wrong, but some identified Louis Armstrong and some identified Lance Armstrong, which would be interesting to see Louis Armstrong playing the trumpet and Lance Armstrong riding his bicycle across the surface of the moon. But very few would know that it's Neil Armstrong. Well, if I don't have that content, what good are my methods going to do? I have nothing to teach the children.
We're discussing method-driven versus content-driven education, beginning a multi-part series on progressive education versus classical Lutheran education with Dr. Thomas Korchak, assistant professor of theology at Concordia University, Chicago, author of the book Lutheran Education from Wittenberg to the Future. He'll be speaking at an open house at noon on Sunday, January the 28th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. His presentation is entitled Forward to the Past, How a Classical Education Truly Prepares a Child for the Future. You can find out more about this open house by calling 618-633-2202 or visit school.stpaulhamel, all one word, .org, school.stpaulhamel.org. When we come back, what is missing from that classroom where college-age students have made it through high school into college and maybe some way into college and are not quite sure who was the first man on the moon? What's not happening in that classroom that should be? The prosperity gospel, godliness, Islam, abortion, religious truth claims, scientism, the centrality of justification. You can meet and hear some of your favorite guests teach on these topics at the 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 8th and Saturday, June 9th in Collinsville, Illinois. Collinsville is 15 miles east of St. Louis. Learn more at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 8th and 9th in Collinsville, Illinois.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Contending for Truth in an Age of Anti-Truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We have a special offer for first-time donors to Issues Etc. For any size gift during the months of January and February, we'll send you an autographed copy of Pastor Will Wheaton's new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety. Make your first-time contribution online at issuesetc.org or send your check to Issues Etc., Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234, and we'll send you an autographed copy of Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans in their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armed forces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armed forces.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Thomas Korchak is our guest. First part of a multi-part series on progressive education versus classical Lutheran education. Today we're talking about method-driven versus content-driven education. You described that situation where you have college students who are not quite sure who was the first man to walk on the moon, but they were fairly sure that his last name was Armstrong. We're just kind of grasping at the various Armstrongs they might have been familiar with. So I'm picturing the classroom where they get to that point where they come to you without that kind of basic knowledge of, say, American history or science. What's not happening in that classroom that should be happening?
Well, most of this stuff starts at the early age. It starts at just learning the basic facts of history, of geography, of who we are and where we've come from. And I think you can quickly apply that as Christians, where our Christian children, we need to teach them their history, who they are, where they've come from. And when they can understand those questions, then they can apply their faith in the situations they're going to come across in their lives. And we have no clue what they're going to come across, but if they've got a basic storehouse of knowledge and information, if they've got context and understanding about their past and who they are, then they can apply it in whatever new and unique circumstance they're going to find themselves in.
What does that, in a general sense, obviously we can't go into all that detail, but what does that canon of knowledge, that basic knowledge, what does it consist of, generally speaking?
I think that there are certain things that every citizen, every Christian citizen, needs to be familiar with in order to operate in our society. We need not just a basic understanding of history, and I'm a history buff, so I'm biased against that, I admit, but an understanding of civics, the role of government, the nature of our Constitution. There has to be an understanding of the nature of science. And I would have to add into that the history of science as well, because we're usually given just a scientific method with no context for how that method developed and maybe some of the weaknesses of that method. We need a basic understanding of geography, of the world in which we live, of what other nations have gone through and their situation. We need a basic understanding of math. It's not good enough for a child to be able to punch some numbers into a calculator or into the computer and get the right answer back. Like language, numbers or familiarity with mathematics comes with playing with numbers, using numbers at a basic level. One of the worst things you can do is give an elementary child a math problem and say, here, use your computer to figure it out. No, they have to just become familiar with the use of numbers. And connected with that is also music and the role of music in a person's life and learning to make music, not just to listen to music, but to actually make it with your own voice.
Would you add to that also, I'm sure you would, what we would otherwise call literature, the Western canon of literature?
Oh, absolutely, of course, yes. Because as I get to read the finest works of literature, of Western literature, I'm able to step out of my own context, my own world, and I can enter the world of another, and it's a whole different world than of what I've experienced. That's the way I like to look at literature, is that it takes me out of my own little corner, and it brings me into to the bigger conversations that exist out there. And as I use the finest works, not the most politically correct works, not that which is most trendy in today's society, but that which has withstood the test of time and has proven itself to be worthy of being read, my world certainly expands.
Let's return to the subject of technology. That's kind of where we began with the question of, you know, can Google replace an education?
Right.
Have we moved from a content-driven education to a method-driven education, and now lately perhaps even moving into something even more superficial, a technology-driven education?
I think you may have something there with looking at as a tech-driven education. And one of the things that's frightening is how much technology or technological companies are intruding into the educational field. It started by providing just hardware, and now it's software. And when you hear some of the latest research on how software is designed to get a person hooked into, almost addicted to using technology, it should be somewhat concerning for parents and for educators as well. Now, I'm not against technology by no means. I'm not against smartphones or iPads or computers or anything like that. That they're an essential part of our lives. But I would rather take a well-trained a student who has been well-trained in the classical liberal arts and have them figure out a piece of tech rather than the other way around. One of the interesting things that's developing, and there's a lot of interesting articles on the internet, on you can find it by going to Google, is to look at the growing recognition among corporations for the need for graduates to be well-trained in the liberal arts. They're realizing that all you can be well-educated in STEM, but what you really need is also a grounding in the liberal arts to place some technological advancements in context.
You say that a classically trained mind can adapt to technology and employ it with great benefit, but not the opposite. What do you mean by that?
Well, if I've just learned technology, I know how to do the same thing over and over again. If I've learned according to the liberal arts, I've learned how to think. And those two are completely different. And really, a classical education, a classical liberal arts education, stressing training a child to think, giving them the tools to think, giving them the tools to learn and to grow. If I don't know how to read, I'm not going to be able to read a manual to learn how to use a computer. I have to be able to read and be able to read well. So it's not just a matter of literacy, but also to be read well and to be able to discern whether this technology is actually going to be good for my life or whether it's going to be a hindrance. I think that's the biggest question that we're facing, is how much of the technological advancements that we've experienced in the past 30 years is good going forward. Is it good that we're going to have the self-driving cars, for example? What are some of the ethical decisions? I listened to a podcast recently where some major automotive companies are now hiring ethicists, people who have been classically trained in ethics, ethics, because they realize that ethical decisions are going to have to be programmed into self-driving cars, and someone who's been educated just in STEM isn't capable of making those ethical decisions. I think that's one of the neatest illustrations of the need for classical education today.
It seems we've kind of come back around full circle. It sounds like what you're saying is, in your answer to the first question was, you know, if you do not have a classical education, or so the equivalent of it, you don't know what to look for. It sounds like you're saying that a classically educated mind not only knows what to look for, employing the technology, or, for that matter, going to the old school way of going to the library, but they also know what's important in all that information. Is that true?
Exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's so much information out there, and I have to be able to discern what's important, what's valuable, what's going to be beneficial to me, what's going to be good for my neighbor. We need a generation of young people who are able to think in those ways. And that's what a classical education prepares me to do. I gain access to some of the greatest thinkers, the greatest writers of all time, and they assist me in answering these new questions, questions which in some cases have never been asked before. But I have these people behind me in my mind coaching me in how they should be answered.
Dr. Thomas Korchak is assistant professor of theology at Concordia University Chicago, author of the book Lutheran Education, From Wittenberg to the Future. He'll be speaking at an open house at noon on Sunday, January the 28th at St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois. His presentation is titled Forward to the Past, How a Classical Education Truly Prepares a Child for the Future. You can purchase his book, Lutheran Education, From Wittenberg to the Future, by calling Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours. Their number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Next time in our series on progressive education versus classical Lutheran education, we will be discussing the role of the teacher. Dr. Korchak, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we're going to continue our series with Pastor Will Whedon on Lutheran piety. We're going to be talking about faithful and frequent reception of the Eucharist. That has two parts to it. It's not just faithful, but it's also frequent. So how frequent is frequent? We'll be answering that question. And what does the Bible say is faithful reception of Christ's body and blood in the Lord's Supper? We'll also have Pastor Tom Baker lead us in a Sunday school lesson on Paul's first journey in Acts chapters 13 and 14. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
This book is all about how to help recover piety in the house.
Pastor Will Whedon, talking about his new book, Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey, Recover the Joys of Piety.
What do you do when people have confused a legalistic pietism for any form of Christian piety? And by piety, I just mean godly habits.
Learn more about Thank, Praise, Serve, and Obey at issuesetc.org.